Welcome to Bad Wheel. My name is Pintu, and with me is my co-host, James.
Hey, Pintu. I have another movie theater Curb Your Enthusiasm story
Let's
for you.
Let's do it. I love to hear those. It always makes my day.
So you know how at some AMC theaters, they have a bar? And
correct.
So at this bar at the AMC over here in Burbank, a man is in front of me and he is ordering four drinks. It's just him. So before we even get into the logistics of how he's exactly going to transport or carry like four drinks of alcohol, the AMC bartender says, "I'm sorry, sir, we're only allowed to serve you two drinks at a time," which, by the way, considering what is, you know, it used to be that there was bars where you could drink in movie theaters. That's more of a recent occurrence. Even two drinks to me sounds like a more than reasonable allowance, because you could very easily get one for you and your underage friends.
And a friend.
Right. So I'm surprised it's not just a one for one sort of scenario. And so he's asking for four. The person says, "No, you can only have two." And he goes, "All right, I want to talk to your manager." So he, you know, he gets on a little, like the little, like, you know, walkie lav mic that they have. And up comes, you know, a person who's like, "Sorry, sir, you know, the policy is that we only can do two drinks at a time." And the guy's like, "Ah, this is effing ridiculous." And the guy's like, "Hey, whoa, let's not swear or get out of control here." And he's like, "Well, I'm the one that's really being an adult." And anyway, the guy throws another fit. And so then the manager goes, "All right, well, we're not going to serve you, sir." And then the guy goes, "All right, let me talk to your boss." So I don't know exactly what his plan was, but he kept going up the chain in terms of, like, I'm going to find the person that's going to allow me
to get four drinks.
And the best part is, and I'm just kind of like, just standing, sharing, like, looks, you know, with people in terms of, like, do you see what's happening right now? The part that was really funny about this scenario was he was saying that the reason he couldn't have the person come back and get the drinks with him is because he's with his 80-year-old grandma. And are you going to really make my 80-year-old grandma walk here?
Walk over here.
And I'm thinking, you got two drinks for your 80-year-old grandma. it's like they're like double shots of vodka or whatever. It's like, yeah, I normally take my 80-year-old grandma to the movies and then get her housed while watching a movie, but don't make her come back over here to get the drink yet. So, yeah, he ended up going up to three tiers of managers before I eventually left. But at that moment, I don't think he was going to get to the – I don't think he escalated all the way to the head of AMC. But he was pretty convinced that he could – can I talk to the manager all the way up?
Wow. No, I mean, it's – so let me ask you this. Were you still behind the guy the whole time?
No. Once he started talking to the progressive sets of managers, the original bartender started serving everybody else.
Okay, that's good. At least, what did you at least get a drink? Or
yeah. Like, again, like the once. Okay. it really went, like, this guy basically just moved off to the side into, like, you know, the zone of waiting to speak to the manager. And then everybody else that had walked over to get a drink was then getting served and leaving as assistant manager to regional manager to the assistant to the regional manager came over.
Yeah. I just don't understand where that guy is coming from, clearly, because there's better ways to do that.
He had the hubris that he could walk in
and to just a bar
and just like, yeah, I'll just go and order four drinks. They'll let you do that. Why wouldn't they?
This isn't any kind of bar. This is a AMC. So Yikes. Well, at least you get some form of entertainment in a way. But that's still... I think it's awesome that you still go to movie theaters, by the way. I cannot get it in me to go to one still, like as often as you do, at least. I mean, I'll go if the kids are like, hey, let's go see this movie. I'm like, great, let's go see a movie that you want to see. But yeah, I can't fathom. It's really the time, getting there, staying there, doing the thing. Like, I want to be able to watch the movie on my own time, pause it, do something else, unpause it, come back, whatever. But that's pretty cool.
Well, when we talk about stuff like attention, again, there's the first thing is always, again, the difference in culture between Los Angeles and lots of other places. This is a movie town where people actually like to go to the theaters.
It's very
for the most part, the audiences are generally more respectful, out here. But also, again, coming back to this idea of like the difference between undeviated attention, that's what a good movie is supposed to do. It's supposed to hold your attention for 2 hours, whatever, give or take. And that's what, you know, that's when you say, oh, like, oh, I saw a great movie this, you know, weekend. It's because you were held that entire time. The reason people out here don't love Netflix so much is Netflix now consciously creates movies that are meant to be on in the background, and that every 5 minutes someone is explaining what's happening or what's going on. So it's kind of clear, if you're not paying attention, that like, oh, okay, yeah, what's, well, yeah. So this way,
they'll just tell me later.
Right. So this way you can go about doing, yeah, quote unquote, multitasking. But what you're really just doing is dividing your attention.
Yeah, I have a lot to say on that one, but I'll just say this one thing. When I watch a show, or when I watch a movie, or even if I'm listening to a podcast or an audiobook in general, I'm trying my best to give it my full attention because I feel like I'm going to miss something. But recently, I've stopped watching shows and movies because even though it can hold my, I'm watching it and paying attention to it, there isn't substance to it. Like, there isn't a meaning behind what you're watching and why you're watching it. Like some of the older shows, there is meaning behind it. There's like character development. There's understanding. There's like, you're trying to understand where, what they're going through, and you become a part of that journey with them, and that's what was so fun to watch. I just don't see that in more recent shows, recent movies. So well, like, that, this is not,
and that not becomes, worth it from that becomes the choice though. So, you know, again, people out in Los Angeles, we don't like the term content when people refer to something as content and people are making content. And if you're constantly making stuff just to fill up content space, that stuff is then usually not to what you're looking for.
High quality.
It's not made with care or, you know, time. But, you know, let me just, you know, contrast this with, so the show I went to on a Monday was, you know, a kind of quote unquote secret show where it was a band playing their new album, and they were recording the show for what's going to be like the future concert film of it. So phones were banned. And the way they do that is there's these little cases that you put your phone into that they hand you at the door, and then they lock the case. So then you walk into the rest of the venue,
yeah.
And you can't look at your phone. No one. So I watched a concert. Check this out. This has happened in the year 2025. I watched a concert in which no one in the crowd at any point held up their phone because they were physically unable to. Like, you had to have your attention just here watching a band play. Mind blowing.
which is awesome. I actually went to, oddly enough, a concert last night, and Yeah, I mean, I recorded some things, but it was mainly like to just capture the moment and then kind of go back to what I wanted to just enjoy the moment, listen to the music, enjoy time with the friends and talk to them. And then kind of, yeah. But it's very hard for people in this, in general, like myself included, to be in the moment as much as we want to be, because we feel like, I don't know, someone's messaging me, or I got to take care of something, or I got to do something. And it's becoming more and more prevalent that we have to fill the time with something else other than the thing that we're doing.
And that's a divided attention, right? Like that's
very much divided attention.
And it comes back to this idea of the catharsis of a good movie, you know, a good experience. Again, there are bad movies. It
happens all the time. What do you?
It happens all the time. But the idea, right, is that you go and your attention is fixed in one place for a couple hours, yeah. Which again doesn't happen to you regularly during the course of the day, and it definitely doesn't happen when you're doing it at home, because as you just said, you're now cutting something up into piecemeal and watching it in sections, checking your phone, making a sandwich, considering throwing that sandwich at somebody, you know, normal stuff.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's like this weird vicious cycle, because like you said, around content, right? The industry now is just trying to create content for the sake of creating content, but it's not always the best. So people are now cutting out, like, oh, well, yeah, maybe I'll just watch that in the background. Like, it's a vicious cycle, because one feeds the other and the other one feeds the other, right? So I'm that much more hesitant to go watch a movie, because I don't know how it's going to be, and I'm not sure if that's the best use of my attention, if you will. So, and I don't want to be rude in the movie and kind of watch it on my, or, you know, look at my freaking phone.
Right? I think this is the point here, though. You're focused on the value of getting something out of it. I'm saying the value is having your attention in one place for a period of time. So even if you don't like the movie, or if you're like, or even for instance, if you're someone like me who's seen like too many movies to the point where like the stuff that I see in a movie is stuff other people don't see. So for instance, we saw Weapons this last weekend, and during the movie, I could see the references to other movies that like inspired the filmmakers. To the point where I then like saw an interview with Zach Krieger, the guy who directed the movie, and he listed off the references. They were stuff that I actually recognized while watching the movie, just because that's the kind of stuff I look for. But so, you know, like I might be a person who, you know, criticizes movies more than other people just because I'm looking at all sorts of stuff. But it's still worth my time to have like gone and had that experience, and then even to take the time to, you know, look at something and, you know, and examine how, you know, because a movie is a big magic trick in terms of like how it gets put together. And there's a myriad of different choices that filmmakers make. And what fascinates me, or what, you know, I pick at are the choices you make. And the choices means everything. It's the choice to shoot something a certain way, frame a certain shot, say a certain line, have a character do something. It's a choice an actor makes. It's just accumulation of choices. And so usually my criticism of particular movies are, well, I don't know if that was like the best choice for that particular scene or whatever it was.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. But it's the activity, right? Like it's, you know, if you, let's say you and me were going to schedule a regular Thursday nights, we're going to go play tennis, right? You don't know what the outcome of that game is going to be. But the activity is what you're doing. So if we're going to play tennis for 2 hours, is it only valuable if you win? Or if I you know, take you to the cleaners, are you still getting, you know, the value
out of it? Yeah. I mean, I think society has now come to a point where, not always, right, to your point, but most of the time, just like, unfortunately, it's like value driven. Like, what am I getting out of this? What is it that we're going to do? Like, is there something, is this a good use of my time? Back to my point, right? And I think I'd love to see us get away from that. It's just very hard to instill that with anyone, right? So for example, even my kids, hey, let's go on a hike. It's like, why? Because
to go on a hike,
to get out, to do something together. A, that's the quote unquote value goal, whatever it is, but that's it. Right.
Right.
And yeah. I mean, we had to unfortunately force them to do it. You know, that's besides the point, but they went on the hike, they enjoyed it, and they came back with a little bit more understanding of the value was spending the time together, not the actual activity. Now we could do whatever we want.
But it still is the activity.
No, you're right. Because
it's this transactional nature, right? Where like, for, you know, because you're doing it in the, you know, family unit spending time together version.
Correct.
But there's also like the version of the hike or the walk or the run or whatever, where you're doing it not because you want to, but you think it gets you in shape, right? You're doing it in a transactional nature, which means you're going to stop doing it at a certain point because you don't actually like doing it. And so, you know, typically that's, you know, one of the jokes around, again, like Los Angeles is that, you know, some people actually like to go hiking, and then some people are compelled to go on a hike, or they're doing it because they think they're going to get something
out of it,
something else. So, like, you know, this is sort of a thing that you and I talk about in our two different projects here, but it's one of the things I increasingly focus on, is that there's a couple of immutable laws, and there are like physics laws. They're like the laws of like thermodynamics,
yeah,
right? Where you can't get more
those energy. You can't deny those, right? Those are here in on Earth.
Well, they're science. Yeah, and they're also rooted in presence. They're rooted in
the now. Correct.
And one of the fundamental laws is that you can't get more energy out than you put in, right? Like that's alchemy.
Usually it's you get less out because you lose some.
Nope.
I mean,
nope.
Yes, nope. You're right. It's the same, but
what's yes
in different
the,
in different
no that's, ways. We have to be firm on this one. What's the law? And energy just transforms. It's neither gained nor lost. It's always just transformed.
It is.
You're talking about. But again, that's the key here, is like there's a law, and then there's these abstractions above the law. So the law is that just energy transforms from one state to another. What you're talking about, like, say, like with driving a car, is that people just are not cognizant of all of the usages of energy that are elsewhere, right? Awesome. Like when you brake, that's energy.
Correct.
Right, the plate's going down and it's getting hot. That's energy, and so you have in a machine, yet you have this in quotes concept of energy loss, because yes, you can't. One of my favorite Simpsons jokes ever is the perpetual motion machine that Lisa builds that keeps going faster and faster, and then Homer yells at her, and he goes, "In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics." It's a great joke. It's a great joke too, because it's from Homer. Like,
you would love that one, of course.
Lots of people love that joke. But it's also, but it's a great joke because also it's Homer of all people, like insisting
saying on, that, yeah, which is not like Homer.
but this idea though of, again, like translate it to alchemy, right? Like, you know, alchemy was all about trading gold, right? Like it's this.
Yep.
One of our most common foibles is that we believe that we can like get more out of something, that like that some magical process will occur. Like that's what's going on a lot with AI right now, right? Is people somehow think AI can be more than what you put in. Like it can gain again, like some sort of extra intelligence that's beyond it. So like anytime you, any again, like you try to like think about this idea of like, oh, what am I getting out of something? Or what this just me doing something becomes this other thing. You're basically asking for, yeah, something extra to be added. You're asking for less information to become more information, which is, it's not an actual thing in terms of that's not how now works. And if our goal, no, right, is to be in the now, the number one thing we have to do is stop looking at like that transactional trade-off, right? Because if you spend all of your time asking yourself what's a good use of your time, you've now spent your time very poorly.
Well, yeah, and it's like you've now wasted that time that you were thinking about the time that you should be using. So it's, yeah, very bad. But
how many times have you, instead of watching the movie on Netflix, you've just scrolled through Netflix for like a half an hour?
Half an hour, I've done 10 minutes, I've done 20 minutes, I've done half an hour. And now, and this is, I mean, as an FYI for you, I just don't fucking watch Netflix anymore. I just can't. I can't do it. I don't like Netflix shows. I was telling this to my friend who works at Netflix and he started laughing. I can't do it. It's usually a specific other TV network that I'll watch because I feel like there's the quality that I'm getting from watching a show that's on that usual network, like HBO or Apple TV or whatever, Apple TV Plus, is better. So I'm like, yeah, I'm sure I'll just pick this random one and I think it'll be good enough. I'll watch an episode and maybe I'll like it. And then I won't, and it's fine, right? But I'm spending the time. I think the important part is what you're getting at, which is something that I would love to get into a little bit, is this transactional nature that we have today is everywhere. It's with work. People get frustrated when they're in line. So yesterday when we went to, just as an example, yesterday I went to the concert and I drove because wasn't going to be drinking or doing anything else. So we drove and of course, like idiots, we didn't leave early enough and we're stuck in traffic. And there are these cars that think they can get there faster. They're cutting people off. They're trying to go around, like, you know, on the shoulder, trying to get faster. I'm like, why? You're still going to be stuck in line trying to get a parking spot. And lo and behold, there was a few cars that were trying to get ahead of us and they didn't get very far and we parked before them. But this notion of I got to use my time and this is a waste of my time, but you could have done something better or different, or just enjoy the time that you do have and just spending it with in the car. It's fine, right? I went with a few people. We had some great conversations in the car. We're going to have conversations there or we're going to have conversations at the concert. It's totally okay. So this is prevalent everywhere that we look today. And I want to go back to something you'd mentioned, which is the attention, right? Attention, which is very important, whether it's you and I talking on a podcast, someone listening to our podcast, or spending time having a conversation with somebody and not taking a look at something else because you don't think that's a good use of your time. And something that you and I have also talked about in the past, which is patient attention and kind of making sure that we think about, right, and we talk about what does that mean. Why is that important at this day and age? Because I feel like my kids, as an example, they're, when they eat lunch or dinner, they have to be on their phone. they have to be watching something. They have to watch like a YouTube or something, like on a TikTok or something. I'm like, dude, just eat. Just, it's okay. Just eat, have a conversation, don't have a conversation, well, and get up and leave. Like, and go do something else later.
No, their attention again is divided. That's, you know, when we say divided attention, like, in, like, think of it as literally as possible. Like, if you have, I like to do the joke, right, of, it's good for, you can do it for kids, right? And, you know, it's like a video game. You have a meter of attention. The meter goes from 0 to 100. You can only spend 100 attention points. And if you're paying attention to 5 different things, if they're in an equal, you know, balance, right, you're 20 points, 20% to each thing. So yeah, everyone, and what's worse is that, like, when you, and people, there's a lot of studies, whatever, that people can, like, Google, you know, or don't Google, because, you know, it'll tell you something weird. But
or AI will tell you something weird.
Yeah, because but at least it's been a somewhat quote unquote known idea that multitasking isn't like, or an actual thing that you can do. Like,
no,
like, functional multitasking is, you know, you can do laundry because you have a washer and dryer in your house, so the laundry can get going, and then you can do the dishes and get the dishwasher going, and then those two are going simultaneously, and while that's happening you can do something else. That's kind of like a functional multitasking. That's
right.
That's like, sure. But in terms of like mental multitasking, what you do is you just juggle. You just switch between the thing, and then whatever the prior stuff was, like, sits in the background and kind of like nags for it to be paid attention to again. You know, like, you, if you want to think about it, like, you know, you got like a series of like puppies that if you pay attention to one, the rest are very eager. Yeah. And so, again, part of the idea that, you know, I think, you know, how we've sort of accidentally kind of like had this conversation already about going on a hike or going to a movie or whatever it is where you have.
Yeah.
The activity is exercise in terms of when you talk about patient attention. Patient attention means that you're remaining in your attention patiently, right? So again, the idea that like, if I can't sit still for 2 hours, even if this, you know, again, like, ideally it's a good movie. And so, you know, the test would be, putting something on where, I don't know, the first Lord of the Rings movie, like, that's a 3-hour movie.
That was a good movie,
but it's, yes,
I agree.
It also should hold your attention. Like, there's enough stuff going on. Like, there's the movie doesn't go very long between action scenes, right? Like, there's a constant sense, correct, of stuff happening, blah, 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 blah. You should be able to just be able to sit and have your attention in that place. And that's still like a pretty passive attention. You're still not doing anything yet. But like, that, if you can't do that, then yeah, you've got an attention problem. And then the same thing, yeah, with like the phone at dinner or like, why am I doing the hike? It's like, pay attention now, like, to the nature, the trees, the whatever it is. And that's part of the exercise, is to actually, so just to do a quick Buddhist, whatever, meditation thing, you know, we talk about the walking meditation, and
correct,
the quick switch you can learn after doing this for a while is your first step is to focus on space, the environment, in terms of like where you're
focused. What's going on around you?
Right. You extrovert as much as possible in terms of you're not thinking about anything. You're also not like thinking about yourself or your body. You're just thinking about, yeah, the space, the dimensions, so, all around you.
It's actually the one thing when I did do it, I've tried it a few times now. It's very hard to do. And the reason it was hard for me to do was because when you're looking around and you're thinking, like you're looking at just, you're trying your best to just observe, but not think about what the actions are, why they became those actions, how those actions came to be, none of that. And that's very challenging for most people.
But that's also the idea behind, again, how your attention works on this 0 to 100 scale, right? Is, again, you can spend it all or in one place or not. And when you get into this presence practice and, you know, practice patient attention, all that detail and the fidelity of the world that you don't see shows up. So again, like as you walk, you know, if like, let's say you're just on a sidewalk and as you walk, as you're walking down the sidewalk, say a tree is approaching, like focus on like that near branch, like coming at you, coming towards you, like see the detail on the leaves, on the bark, all of this. There's so much detail that's out in the world that you do not actively see at any given moment. And one of the ways to experience it is to actively do it, like to actively
look, pay attention to it
for like as much detail as you possibly can. So anyway, if you do this exercise of like, again, more frequently, you learn to snap almost in terms of like extrovert, I'm in the environment. And then so, and you can always, you can also think about on the exhale in terms of if you want to map it to your breath. So it's like, all right, I'm out here. And then on the inhale, you return to your body.
Right.
And so you, as a body, are in space and moving about.
Oh, I see. Okay, so it's not like you're trying to do something with your breath, or you're not trying to do something, trying to pay attention to some part of your body. You're just being observant of the fact that you yourself, as a being, as somebody who is in a point in space, are in that point in space and time.
Yeah. And again, is without that exact concept, again, but without making, again, without that idea of the meaning or the history or the whatever, it's more of, again, you've just, that your attention that went all the way out and looked at the world. Now on the in breath, your attention's now on your body. And so you can feel whatever part of your body that's having a sensation in that moment, because it's just there. But then there's, and then you breathe out again and you're out in space. And so, and then you get this idea of the mapping of you and your body moving through the environment. And then when you're focused on that kind of stuff, all of the commentary track just has less room to exist. Like you're just not giving it up.
Because your attention is taken up by you paying attention to the things you just mentioned, right? As opposed to trying to make sense of what's happening.
Exactly. And so that's kind of like the recommendation on, even if you're going to do like the family walk, right?
Correct.
Try to make it just about the walk.
Yeah. No. And I, you know, a lot of people have this whole rule where they're like, oh, you got to put your phones away and phones this and phones that. I mean, yes, phones are a huge distraction. They add to this whole division of attention. And also to some degree, they also have this back to the point of like, are you getting the value out of it? Right? Like, oh, I could be doing something else. I need to get more value out of my time. This value creation or loss, rather, is really, it's very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very frustrating.
Well, also let's ask a very fundamental question here, right? Because I've lived very like two distinct existences with my phone. My current version is it's permanently on do not disturb. So I find out what's going on when I choose to pick it up. The other the other existence I've had was the I process 100 plus, you know, emails a day. And there's also a functional difference, though, between constantly checking your phone and then receiving and even perhaps trading information, but that information doesn't go anywhere or do anything, versus if you have a job where there's an actual feedback loop of, you know, so simple example here would be if I'm, you know, connected to some sort of database that's like a ticket managing system and I'm processing, like I'm a step in the processing. So like the email notifies me and then I take an action and then that action progresses something, right? Like I'm now actually like performing some sort of like functional utility that has a direct line of feedback. Like I do something, like a direct action is then like taken.
Right.
But how often are people on their phones actively interacting, but like you're not really getting any sort of like direct feedback? Because even like social media really isn't like a direct feedback loop. It's pretty indirect.
It's not direct. No, right? It's indirect.
Right. Like you post something and then someone posts something and then someone replies and someone
likes it. Oh, did you like it? Did you like my post?
But like it's not, again, it's slightly different than this. Again, I'm helping a ticket get like, you know, processed in a chain of information.
Yeah, so it's I think social media has kind of made it a lot worse. But a lot of people share, and that's why I don't post, nor even am on social media in general. I just think it's just trying to get one step ahead or one step before whatever somebody else. It's not the intent, right? I want to share positivity. So I mean, I'll take a video or I'll take a picture, but I'll share it directly with like a person. That's really it, and that's all. But not so that, you know, I can get value or show that I had, you know, look how I spent my time valuably, right? I got so much out of it. Check it out. But I just do it for myself, right? So I don't know.
So the one thing I'll give social media in terms of value, in terms of form and function and what it can be utilized for, is that when events happen, it's kind of cool to have this distributed information network where, you know, multiple people live on the scene with their phones are able to give you multiple views and perspectives. You're not waiting for, you know, like a news media person to come along. And it's also a potential skew, because the other thing we have to pay attention to on even local national news as it goes up, right, is that it's still filtered information that the way you receive it is always from a singular perspective. And so it can sometimes be illuminating, right, when you see like, you know, like a report or an image, and then again, like someone describes it, right? They give it words and gives it meaning. But then you see all of these on the scene videos of like the people who were like there at the time, and you know, there's enough of them where you're like, wait a minute. I feel like the quote unquote official news has either gotten part of this story wrong or skewed or whatever it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, the only downside I see, you're right, absolutely, getting multiple different views. The only downside I see to that is there's so much noise, and then there's signal, right? And trying to decipher as a person who is on social media trying to understand what's going on is the trying to take out the noise and just focus on the signal portion that makes the most sense to you. Now, for me, it's different than somebody else, which is okay. But how do I do that effectively?
I think the other term you want to add here is pollution. So
sure, yeah, pollution.
Well, because that's the thing. Like when you talk about signal and noise, right? If we take like 20 raw videos, those are all signal. Like the noise is all, again, the added stuff, where if I then add commentary to it or you insert an AI video or, you know, all this other stuff, like, like in terms of like when we talk about what is signal and what is noise, like a pure video feed is by definition signal. It's the noise is all of the, again, like, this is what this means, or again, I'm polluting the ecosystem with, you know, counter information, or all this. That's one of the bigger problems with AI, again, is it now makes you question, you know, not only do you have bad actors using it to put out false information, but then it makes you question when you see a legitimate thing and you now say, oh, is this real? And like, and that's weird, right? That you get that sort of like sense of doubt about like what actually happened. And that's where we're at right now in terms of like the macro is like this big sense of doubt about everything that's going on, and everyone's preying on it. And it's very frustrating for, like a great example, this one's fundamentally just so dumb, but you remember there was a hurricane that hit California last summer.
Yeah.
This is a fact. This is an event. This is a thing that happened, but there were certain people who didn't believe it.
Yep.
Because, stuff gets made up. And you're like, well, I understand that, but this is, again, and so that's the challenge that you have, is that there are events that happen that are real tangible, happened in the physics of time and space. And then you have all of the narrative, which is, again, extra.
Noise, pollution, things that people are adding their own flavor to. And I mean, that's a kind of why, you know, when we go back to what we talked about today, which is patient attention in general, trying to be in the moment without trying to get value out of the moment, right? It all has to do with taking the data information that you have at its raw format, right? Without you adding any added pollution to it, to your point earlier. So for example, if I see something happening outside, I don't make up a story around it and say, this is what's happening, right? But it's so natural for all our brains to do that. This is how we're wired, right? Because we want to make some sense of what we're seeing and have a thing. They're like, okay, that's how I understand it to be. It's just easier for us. It's the challenging part is to take that filter off and just see it for what it is.
Yeah. And again, like the idea is, I think the last thing I want to like add on to this. So, you know, you might be asking yourself at this point then, like, okay, well, what is wisdom? What is understanding, right? What's that one section of the Eightfold Path, right? You know, so it's right intention, right? And then right thought. And the way I like to kind of like talk about it is thought is the actual like processing of all the actual like of, again, like language. Correct. And math and, yes, logic and rationale. Where view is about perspective. Okay. And so we've had these kind of conversations about perspective. I want to leave on, because I had just been having a different conversation the other day about this. And I love this analogy. So there's this exercise, this scientific experiment that's also a metaphor. But like, again, you can do it. It works better with like younger kids than your kid's age. But it's, you take three bowls of water, and it's hot, room temperature, and cold. And yeah, the key is the hot is not too hot. You have to be able to put your hand in it. But it's right. So it can't be like boiling hot. It just needs to be generally hot so you can put your hand in it.
Warm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you put your hand in the hot water, and then you move that hot water, take that hand out of the hot water and into the room temperature water, you will experience that as cold. If you put your other hand into the cold water and then take it out of the cold water and put it into the room temperature water, you'll experience that temperature as hot. You have these default frames of perspective that you're moving from. And so the two different sensations will feel, even though the bowl in the middle is the exact same temperature. So from an experiential perspective, both experiences are quote unquote true. They're true to you. And they're different perspectives, right? Because again, you had different starting points from your perspectives. So then the question is, well, what is the actual temperature of the bowl? Temperature
of each of the water, yeah.
And this is where we can talk about how like Buddhism sits as like a maybe like a philosophical idea, but then there's also a very tangible, you know, practice of science in terms of we can admit two things here. One, that your perspective is valid always. It just has a starting point, and because of its starting point, it provides a particular answer. And that answer, in that limited, like again, from A to B, is true. Like it's not invalid, right? However, if you then, you know, if let's say it's two different people, I did the hot water and you did the cold water, and then we both submitted our answer, and so I say cold and you say hot, and then we both get the correct answer back, and you're both wrong. it's actually lukewarm. And so the idea on being able to have right view is understanding the nature of perspectives, that perspectives correct. Have relative frames of reference, and that to get to the quote unquote real truth takes a sense of triangulation, of being able to like zoom out and see multiple perspectives and understand that, okay, wait a minute. The reason I experienced something differently than you experienced something differently is that our starting frames were different. And that in order to like then determine what the actual blah, 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 blah temperature is, we'll have to come up with a scientific experiment and scales. And one of us will come up with Celsius and it'll be much more elegant. And one of us will come up with Fahrenheit, which will be equally true, just the numbers will be weirder.
No, that's absolutely spot on. That's a great experiment. And I think it kind of brings us back to your viewpoint and kind of where you are and what you're looking at and how your attention is of the world is all around where you're starting, right? And your expectations and your current previous experiences rather to how you got here and a little bit of what unfortunately is plaguing at least the United States today, unfortunately, but we are here. So I appreciate the time again, James. Thank you.
Thank you. Till next time.